Okay, thank you, James. Our next speaker is going to be Alfred Cass, and title is Evaluating the Quality of Deep Tillage in Vineyard Development. Alfred Cass.
Thank you, Alfred. Thank you, Tom. Almost no vineyard is ever developed without deep tillage. It's a absolute primary, fundamental, first step. And in fact, deep tillage is basically a tool for manipulating terroir, the agro-terroir that Tom spoke about a little earlier. And deep tillage affects all those factors that James mentioned, soil depth, penetration resistance, water holding capacity, root penetration. So, and once soil tillage has occurred and the next steps of vineyard development have moved on, it's impossible to go back and rectify any mistakes made in soil tillage. So really, to coin a phrase James used, it behoves us to define what the quality parameters of soil tillage are and develop some means of measuring them so that we, in developing vineyards, we can be sure that this first fundamental step is correct. So the problem, this intrinsic part that tillage plays in wine quality and the significant technological developments that have occurred, and the fact that really very little scientific research has been done on tillage, and there's almost no criteria being applied at a practical scale on measuring the quality of the tillage, has induced me to put together this presentation with the way that tillage really affects vine performance is that fruit development is very much dependent on creating a root zone of specific size. Tom mentioned this relationship between evaluating soil and matching the soil to the rootstock. Well, tillage is a means of, in fact, creating a specific engineered root zone and assists in choosing the right rootstock. And the fundamental aim then in matching soil and rootstock is to ensure uniform optimum ripening of fruit so that you can deliver to the winery the best quality fruit possible. So uniform fruit ripening really needs a uniform soil moisture storage capacity, probably the most fundamental soil factor in assuring good quality fruit and ultimately good quality vine. And of course, as James has pointed out, assures drainage and the correct root volume. However, if poorly done, of course, soil tillage, deep tillage, can fail to improve the agro-terroir, and it might even make it worse. And once that tillage has been done, the grape grower is stuck with that particular problem through the life of the vineyard. So my aim then is here to propose a set of simple measurements that can be used to describe the quality of the tillage operation for different methods of soil tillage. There are a variety of tools used, and to relate that to the requirements of the vine itself. So let's look at some tillage tools, the most commonly used tools. Firstly, the one that's persisted with us for a long time is a simple wingless tine. It's a standard piece of equipment sold by most large tractor manufacturers like Caterpillar. And it looks like that. And it's not very efficient at fracturing soil. It requires a lot of passes across the land, so it's not very efficient in fuel conservation, in energy conservation. It's been around a long time. In fact, I have a reference there to a 1901 publication, and it's probably the most widely used tool in vineyard development in most parts of the world today. This is a case of, if it worked well for my grandfather, it worked well for me. And so it's still in use. There is also a slip plough in use, in certainly fairly widely in California, and it's basically a simple wingless tine here with a plate attached to it there, suspended by cable to the tractor, and the soil is conveyed up this plate, falling off the edges and mixing it during the ripping operation. The plate is as wide as 30 centimeters, and this machine has a very high draft because you're basically pulling a big piece of steel almost vertically through the soil. Certainly is not efficient in terms of energy conservation. A newer development is a winged tine, which is simply a wingless shank here to which are attached various large wings. It's had a long history in Britain. It was developed and used in South Africa in the viticultural industry, and then more recently in Australia and California. It's a fairly large machine, fairly large tool with a fairly wide wing. And more recently still, in the last few years, oscillating tines have appeared on the market and are being used by contractors, for example, soil works. It basically employs a oscillating wing, which may be simply driven off a power takeoff, a PTO here, and the wing simply oscillates up and down. There are some more sophisticated machines have recently appeared that are driven by hydraulics. There's the wing, there's the tine, there is the hydraulic operating arm, and a second pair of wings is attached in this particular photograph. So there's a lot of scope here with this new machine for being able to manipulate your agro-terroir by doing different things in placement of wings and the angling the wings, and oscillating rate, amplitude, etc. But almost no research has been done, although a little bit has started. So if we are then to evaluate which of these tines is better than the other, or to optimize the settings on this oscillating tine, I would propose that there are five things that we need to look at. One, firstly, is the absolute fragmentation, the decompaction of the root zone that can be measured in absolute terms as a penetration resistance or hardness. And James mentioned that earlier. The other is the relative size of the zone that's decompacted. Clearly, some of these tools are more efficient than others in breaking up the soil. And in particular, what we mean by efficiency is breaking up a large cross-sectional area of the rip profile with a minimum number of passes. In other words, trying to conserve energy. The third thing is the degree of loosening. Is it what degree of change has occurred after the machine has passed compared to before the machine went through? And the fourth one is the uniformity of loosening. We don't want some parts of the profile still hard or recompacted and other parts loose. And finally, we want this loosened soil profile to persist through time for the lifetime of the vineyard. So there are five factors that we might consider. So I put together some simple measurements and the mathematics for determining these, starting with the relative area of the decompaction profile. And there is no absolute size of root zone that is good or bad, but if we look at some decompacted zones, and in this case this was a wingless tool, there's a very narrow slot being ripped here in this particular picture in which the topsoil has fallen in to indicate the extent of the ripping, and you can see it's not very wide. Other tools, like the winged tine, produces a much wider rip, a much wider decompaction, and what you notice in this particular photograph is that the lateral extent of the decompaction is about twice the depth that the tool was placed. And that holds true as the tool is is pushed deeper or shallower. In this case here, we're down to about 120 centimeters, but we can trace the decompaction at the surface of the soil to about 244 centimeters. And what we've done is simply found the loose soil using a probe or a hammer, or it's a very simple process, and then sprayed, as we've moved across this profile here, sprayed or dotted a line indicating the compact soil from the soft soil. That gives us a way of measuring the area of the rip profile. So bearing in mind this ratio of twice the lateral extent to the depth, we can define an ideal rip profile. There is no absolute ideal volume, but there is a relative ideal area of that can be decompacted in terms of this lateral extent being twice the depth. So here's our ideal tool being drawn through the soil in this direction, soil surface, and it's some sort of imaginary hypothetical tool that is going to elevate the soil as these ripping tools do, inflate the soil to the surface, and leave a rectangular decompaction area here. And so the ideal area would be twice the square of the depth of ripping. So the decompaction area index then can be calculated as a simple ratio of the area of the ideal to the area of the actual. That's our ideal. That might be our wingless tine. Clearly there's a big difference in size here, so that this index would vary from 0 to 1. 1 here, close to 0 here, and obviously the ideal would be 1. The closer it got to 0, the poorer. And the wing tine producing somewhere between 0 and 1 in this case here. If we consider the absolute hardness criterion, there's a way of measuring soil hardness, which James alluded to, using cone penetrometer. In these particular measurements that I'm going to be showing you soon, we used a 6 millimeter cone penetrometer attached to a pressure transducer of 250 newtons. There is a lot of research been published on the absolute value of penetration resistance that vines can exert, and in fact it's 2 to 2.5 megapascals at field capacity water content. Above that, in a wet profile, a vine root can't grow through the soil. The lower limit, however, there is some kind of lower limit here. You can't loosen soil infinitely loose and expect a vine root to grow. It should be less than about half a megapascal, not one as I've indicated here. So the ideal then lies between about a half and up to 2 megapascals at field capacity water content. The next index is the decompaction hardness index, which might be computed simply as a penetration resistance outside the decompaction zone divided by the penetration resistance inside the decompaction zone. And here's a little illustration of a decompaction profile, half of it anyway. And there might be, one might make a series of measurements outside and a series of measurements inside, where outside the soil would be hard, inside would be soft. And so you'd expect your index to vary between 0 and some value that's quite high, maybe 10. Any index that's moving in the direction of a high value is ideal. Anything around 1 is poor. And if the DHI index is around 1, and the absolute value of penetration is about 2, then the soil should not have been ripped in the first place because it didn't need ripping. And anything less than 1 compaction occurred. The really bad news is that your tillage operation failed to change the terroir in a positive direction. Uniformity of loosening, this relates really to the importance of soil moisture in tillage. You can't till soil successfully unless the soil moisture is somewhere around the plastic limit. If you till it to, and that's the result you get when tilled at the plastic limit, you get a fracturing into a range of optimum size particles. If you till it too wet, the soil is remolded. If you till it too dry, it's powdered and fragmented into clods. And the end result of tilling at the wrong moisture content is that you end up with a lot of variability in the tilled profile. And here I've indicated hard areas as distinct from soft areas where you can see roots growing by these sprayed on paint lines. And so if we try and estimate and measure this, a suitable index would be simply the standard error of the mean penetration resistance outside the compacted zone divided by the standard error inside the compacted zone. And again, we're varying in the same way, 0 to 10. A high value is improved uniformity. A low value, getting to 10 to 1, is minimum improvement. And less than 1, there is more variability. So if we look at them, if we consider these four factors, four of the five, we put some judgments on them here, too loose, good, moderate, through to compacted. We can set up these criteria here for penetration resistance, therefore decompaction, area index, there the hardness index, and there are the uniformity index. So if some preliminary data, I've never been able to do a full side-by-side comparison of all these tools. All I've been able to do is monitor from time to time the individual tools. Primary data shows for wingless tines, preliminary data shows that clearly, of course, the DAI is poor. You've got to do this kind of tillage operation over and over again. Whereas the slip plow, its biggest limitation is that the hardness index is poor because you've got soil sliding up this plate and falling off and recompacting. And in particular, the uniformity index is poor. And so a slip plow really doesn't warrant further use in the industry. The wing tine does much better. It comes out as moderately good in terms of all the criteria. But the oscillating tine, in fact, emerges as being very good in terms of the area index, because the oscillating tine tends to push this 45 degree angle here out closer to the ideal square. So these four quality parameters can be quite useful. The fifth parameter, the sustainability one, well, we can only apply that over time. These oscillating tines show great promise and, in fact, represent a great step forward in creating a more favorable agro-terroir. There is scope in using an oscillating tine in to save energy, to cut down on greenhouse gas emissions, so it has a good selling point. We need to consider other factors, of course, like draft requirements. Maybe the draft on an oscillating tine may be much higher than for a wing tine or a wingless tine. So that needs to be taken into consideration. And we need more research on the operation of oscillating tines in particular in relation to vine energy requirements. And those are my references.
We have time for one question for Al. Yeah, Toby.
What What tool would you suggest for cemented horizons, where you're, it seems like you're always going to have a uniformity issue?
Well, I guess a cemented horizon, by that mean it's pretty rigid and doesn't break easily. Do you want to grow vines in a cemented horizon?
Yeah.
You do? Well, yeah, the wingless tine does best in these very hard, rocky, cemented horizons because it's less subject to breakage. But you've got to cross rip, so you've got to do multiple passes.
Okay, thank you. Those of you with other questions can get together with Alf at the break.